It's Central Time. I'm Chris Molina. You're with us on the Ideas Network.
And I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. Coming up, which quotes have shaped your life and why? And we're not necessarily talking about the big famous ones, but the sayings and phrases in your own family. We'll want to hear from you in just a few minutes.
First, Wisconsin's Department of Corrections Secretary John Litcher announced this week that he will be stepping down from his position next month. Litcher has been secretary since 2016, but has also held that position in the past.
Litcher's second-in-command, Kathy Jess, will be taking over and will face significant challenges that the department and staff are facing.
Patrick Marley joins us now to take a deeper look at the issues the new secretary will need to address. Patrick is a state government reporter and politics reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Patrick, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Chris.
Yeah, so first off, what was behind Secretary Litcher's decision to retire?
He's just saying that he saw it as time to retire. He's in his early 70s. This is his second stint as corrections secretary. You know, it is unusual for secretaries to step down close to elections, you know, in an election year. But we don't really know if there's anything beyond that that's behind his decision.
So we don't necessarily know if anyone in the legislature or anywhere else was sort of trying to nudge him aside or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, the legislature really wouldn't have the ability to do that. The governor, he's a representative of the governor. The governor certainly could, but we've got no indication that that happened in this case. I mean, it's a very challenging time for the Department of Corrections. That said, they're in many ways in a place that's better today than they have been in a number of years. You know, they've got very serious challenges with their juvenile prison that's under criminal investigation and the subject of multiple lawsuits. But, you know, the legislature and the governor recently passed a law to close that facility by 2021, open up regional facilities to replace it. And so really they have a better story to tell about the condition of juvenile corrections for the first time in a number of years. They do have a lot of other challenges on their worker shortage and their overtime costs and their growing inmate population, but that's issues they've been struggling with for many years.
So that brings us to the new secretary, Kathy Jess, who's going to be taking over in just under a month from now. What can you tell us about her?
So she's a career person in the department. I think she's been there for more than 30 years. Started as a correctional officer, worked her way up. She's been a deputy warden and a warden before she was deputy secretary, which is the number two position at the agency. She headed the Division of Adult Institutions, which is the biggest unit of corrections. It oversees the 22 or 23,000 inmates and the, I don't know, a couple dozen prisons that we have. As soon as Litcher became secretary in February of 2016, he appointed her to be his deputy. So for the last 2 years, she's, you know, been helping run the department. Now she'll sit at the head of the table.
And do we have a sense whether or not policymakers have been happy with Litcher's performance and, as a result, also Jess's performance as well in the last couple of years?
Well, as I mentioned, I think that the state of juvenile corrections has caused a lot of hand-wringing among lawmakers from both sides. When Litcher replaced Ed Wall, who had led the agency before him, I would say both rank-and-file officers and lawmakers from both parties were welcomed Litcher coming back into the agency very much. They were very eager to have him come there. He was able to, I think, calm some of the concerns of the workers. They continue to be very frustrated by the shortage that results in them having to work many, many hours. He was able to get them some raises, which was the first substantial increase that they had seen in some time. I think, though, anybody who's in that job finds that it is a very tough place to work because the workers are very dissatisfied. The budget always needs increases because our population of inmates continues to grow and the cost of providing them health care and things like that continues to grow. This is a tough job.
And we are talking right now with Patrick Marley, state government and politics reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking about a incoming change at the top of the Department of Corrections. And sort of what you were just talking about there, Patrick, I'm wondering if this head of the DOC position, it's got Not a whole lot of glamour to it. I feel like we don't really talk about the Department of Corrections very much on this show, unless something is happening here that's bad, whether it be Lincoln Hills, whether it be prison overcrowding. Is this somewhat of a thankless job?
Absolutely. I mean, it is a thankless job because, you know, there's not a lot of good news that comes out of the Department of Corrections, right? You're overseeing tens of thousands of felons. And it's not like an agency like, say, the Department of Natural Resources, which, you know, has its share of controversial issues on environmental decisions that it makes, but also, you know, has lots of good stories to tell about the hunting season or, you know, the way that it's handling environmental enforcement. Department of Corrections, it's usually not good news that's coming out of there. So it's a tough job from a PR standpoint. And, you know, it's a very expensive operation. It's more than $1 billion a year. And this prison population that's growing is really, we're really at a crucial point. You know, Litcher has been chairing a task force to study the need for a new prison. Jess will fill in and take that role. Everybody seems to see it as inevitable that we will need to build another prison or find some other way to house inmates because the population has gotten so big. That's going to be expensive no matter what we do. Obviously, building a prison and staffing it is going to be very expensive. Sending them to private prisons, which is an option that nobody has really latched onto, but it is an option that would be out there, will be controversial. It would be cheaper, but there's concerns about accountability. It's something that Democrats would strongly oppose. That would be a real, real firestorm. You know, the other option to reduce prison costs would be to incarcerate fewer people, but that is a politically difficult decision. Governor Doyle, at the end of his term, put in a system to let some inmates out early, and that was the first thing Republicans, one of the first things Republicans ended when they took office. You know, if you let out 100 inmates and one of them commits another crime, it becomes very politically perilous.
Yeah, I'm wondering how we've got an election coming up here. I'm assuming that with some of these hot-button corrections issues, we're probably not going to get a lot of movement on that until after the election. But afterwards, I'm curious, Patrick, as someone who covers state politics, do you think this is going to be an area that is going to become a huge campaign issue for both parties, maybe in future elections?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen it emerge as a campaign issue so far in this cycle. I think that you'll see some criticism from the Democrats, probably a lot of criticism from the Democrats of Governor Walker over juvenile corrections just because of the size of the problem that they've had there. Walker's response, of course, is going to be that they've made this decision this year to close the facility and change the way that they handle juvenile corrections. But the bigger issue, we really haven't heard the Democratic candidates for governor saying what they think we should do with this growing prison population if they want to have, other than, you know, Matt Flynn has said that he would pardon people who are in on drug convictions. I'm not sure that there would be enough people to bring down the population enough to prevent the establishment of a new prison. But that's a great question. We need to nail down how they all feel about that, what their approach to corrections would be.
And going back to Lincoln Hills for just a moment, I know that there have been a couple of lawsuits out there floating around for the new incoming secretary, Secretary Jess. Are these going to be things that she is going to actively have to deal with, or are these things that either will have wrapped up by the time Litcher steps aside or that he'll have dealt with everything?
No, they will not be wrapped up. The primary lawsuit over Lincoln Hills was brought by the ACLU over conditions for the current inmates. There was an injunction put in place last year that required the state to reduce its use of pepper spray and in solitary confinement. That is in settlement talks. We don't know quite how those are going, but at some point they're going to have to either reach an agreement or that's going to go to trial and determine if this injunction should be made permanent and sort of what the how Lincoln Hills will have to operate for its last 2 or 3 years. And then individual inmates have brought lawsuits as well. One was recently settled for almost $19 million, which is, I believe, the biggest state settlement for, you know, civil rights that we've ever had. The facts of that case were really quite sad, where someone tried to commit suicide and was very severely brain damaged and is going to require lifetime 24-hour care, so the costs for that case were extremely high. These other cases are, one I can think of is where an individual's arm was broken. You know, we don't know how the state could prevail in that, or the state could reach another settlement. The potential for millions of dollars in additional payouts is certainly there with these multiple lawsuits that are pending.
Well, a lot to watch for going forward. Patrick, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Patrick Marley is a state government and politics reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was with us to look at the change in leadership in the Department of Corrections and what challenges the new secretary will face. When you think of memorable quotes, you might think of a penny saved is a penny earned, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing, and so on.
There are countless famous quotes out there, and you don't have to look to ancient philosophers, politicians, or celebrities to find one that fits in your life.
Consider your own family, your friends, your coworkers, or other acquaintances. Maybe there's a particular saying, phrase, or quote that they would say in certain situations, and perhaps you find yourself uttering those same things.
And we want to hear them at 800-642 1234. Which quote from somebody in your life registers with you and why? And you can again call 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas at WPR.org. And Central Time producer Bill Martins recently saw a piece in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that made him think of his dad's wit and wisdom, and we thought it would be really fun to have him on to talk about it. So hi, Bill.
Hi there.
So, you know, part of why this registered for you is I feel like you've told stories about your dad and some of the things, you know, he has said. So if he's a quote machine, what do you exactly mean here?
Well, the guy had a saying, an expression, a phrase, whatever you want to call it, for everything. I mean, you know, there would be occasions when a straight answer would do perfectly fine, but he would take it one step further and he would have some weird analogy or some other saying that I shouldn't say they were all weird, but
some of them
were very weird, and you kind of looked at them like, what in the world are you talking about? That makes no sense. But for the most part, they were pretty spot on in terms of their application and just, you know, they got to the point, and he just was. Even when he passed away late last year at his funeral, we were all just kind of joking around about some of his sayings and had a good laugh about those. He just, you knew there was always a saying not too far away.
So speaking of those sayings, what were some of the most memorable quotes of his for you?
Well, I got a couple of them. The one that sticks with me the most, probably because I happen to just agree with it, is don't shoot your horse in the head till you got another one saddled up.
Okay. So what was that coming from?
Okay, so, I mean, he used that in a couple of occasions, but I think the one where it resonated the most was, I was talking to him on the phone one time, this was many years ago, about thinking about changing my job or a different position where I was working or something, and he was always like, yeah, well, don't shoot your horse in the head till you got another one saddled up. I'm like, yeah, okay, I get that. And it's good advice. It makes perfect sense. You know, have a contingency plan. If a job is something that you depend on for income or whatever it is, don't give up on that one until you have another one to go to. And I find myself throwing that one around every now and then. So I like that one. The other one, I have a visual aid for this one, right?
Okay,
These keys
for those who can't see what's going on.
Is that enough key rattling?
I think that's some good key rattling.
So my mother-in-law actually made this. It's just a normal key ring, but there's this string of, like this thin leather string on here with some beads on it, and these beads have letters on them. JC, what do those say?
Okay, so I see GYATC. Am I correct there?
GYATC. That is correct. So let me tell you about GYATC for a moment. So whenever I'd be talking to him on the phone, and this was, you know, when I was after I left home and was in college or was living in Wausau at the time or whatever, it would always take like 5 minutes for our phone conversations to wrap up, because it would always be like, all right, Bill, you take her easy, okay? All right, Dad, I'll talk to you later. And then he'd go launch into another topic. And that would happen like, you know, 2-3 times or so. And then the very last thing that he would say, what always told me when the conversation was really coming to a close was, all right, and get your butt to church. GYATC.
Yeah, so B obviously standing in, or butt standing in for a word that we're not going to say because of the FCC.
Right.
So what's interesting about this conversation, I want to remind our listeners, we're talking to Bill Martins. He's one of our producers on Central Time, and we're talking about quotes that have stuck with us over time. is they seem to have actually really stuck with you with the horse analogy in particular. You now it got the point across in a way that maybe just giving the advice wouldn't have. And we're going to go to our phones really quickly. We have Mark in Three Lakes, Wisconsin. Hi, Mark.
Yeah.
So what is the phrase that has stuck with you throughout your life?
Have fun, enjoy life. Nobody can do it for you.
And why has that stuck with you, Mark?
I've been clinically dead four times, cut in half by a steering wheel. And, you know, I'm still here. I'm still existing, even though all the doctors claim I should be dead.
Mark, that is a heck of a story.
Wow.
Thank you so much for that call. So, I mean, we've got Mark who has this life philosophy. He's been challenged a few times. And so what do you think about that, Bill?
You know, I hear him say that, and I'm trying to think what my dad would have said about that, and I'm sure he would have had something really colorful. I could only guess what he would probably say. I wish I had something right at the ready to put out there, like something that could match that. But yeah, I guess, you know,
if you've been through a lot. Well, what's funny is we put this this question out on you know, various social media platforms, and one of the responses we got was from Elizabeth Domes. She's our new she's one of our new digital content producers, and she wrote to us, "My dad constantly says it is what it is." She bought him a shirt from Amazon for Christmas with a saying on it. He thought it was funny. Her mom did not, because apparently the quote drives her crazy. I think we've all been there, that sometimes these things can maybe rub you the wrong way a little bit. But, you know, in, you know, a five-word sort of phrase, and it is what it is, you can demonstrate a lot in just a short amount of time.
Yeah, they don't need to be long and have, you know, 150-word expressions here. Mm-hmm. I mean, just short to the point will get it done. My dad had some analogies that were just... whenever it was really cold out, he would say it's colder than a tin toilet seat in the Yukon. And then, you know, he would also say that, you know, if he was really busy with, you know, things, a lot of things coming at him, he'd say he'd be up to his hinder in alligators. Again, not hinder, but
yeah.
And then what was another analogy I was trying to think? Oh, if he'd be watching a Packer game or something, and say the wide receiver would be well covered, he'd say, "Man, they were all over him like flies on a gut wagon."
So, I mean, your dad seems to have had a lot of colorful ways to approach things in his life. And as we keep coming back to, they've stuck with you. So we had a few more of these, one of which was from Betsy Nelson. She is the WPR, or she's our facilities manager. And she wrote, "To humanize someone who is famous or powerful, her dad would say he puts on his pants one leg at a time, just like me." It also kind of sounds like these phrases can make can be a nice leveling of experiences, which is, sure, we all put our pants on one leg at a time.
Yeah.
So it sticks with us.
Yeah, absolutely. It stuck with Betsy, and I know I've kind of heard that in various forms throughout my life as well. And that's kind of one of the another fun thing about these is that, you know, you kind of hear these different takes on the same sort of idea. And I don't know, maybe it just kind of means that we're all sort of on that same page, but we just have different ways of expressing it. And it, you know, what do they say? Variety is the spice of life.
Yeah. So we've been talking a lot about your dad. Was your mom as colorful as your dad?
Not so much. I mean, she had this one word that she would always say, like if she were to get, you know, kind of hacked off about something, you know, like something that wasn't all that big a deal, like if she, you know, burns her toast or something, "Oh, criminy." And she would throw that around a lot. And my sister and I always had a good time making, I don't want to say making fun of her.
Sure.
We made fun of her, you know, imitating her. And that was her one word. But as far as the sayings, like my dad, no, that was his thing.
So I want to go to our callers. We have Travis in Waukesha. Hi, Travis.
Hi. Yeah, my dad has a few colorful things too, but two that kind of really stick out with me is, "We'll cross that bridge when we get there." And he just kind of always uses that in the case of more things like, "Well, what happens if we do this?" And he'll say, "Well, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. So don't worry about that. Just focus on what's in front of you." And then another one he always used to say was, don't count your chickens before they hatch. So I might be talking about something super hopeful, like an investment, and say, mm-hmm. Dad, I'm really excited that this is going to turn out. And he'll say, well, don't count your chickens before they hatch.
And so, Travis, quick question. Did that drive you crazy when you were younger? And do you like it now? Or does it still drive you a little crazy?
Yeah, the cross the bridge was very, very, you know, still drives me crazy. It's not an answer, but the count your chickens before they hatch, that makes sense. It gets annoying because he uses it for everything now, but, I mean, it makes sense if you really think about it.
Well, Travis, thank you so much for that call. And I'm going to admit something, that for a long time, I didn't know that the phrase was, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. I actually combined it with another phrase, which is, we'll burn that bridge when we get to
it. Oh, sure. Yeah, I've heard that.
And my parents didn't tell me for many years because they thought it was so funny. And so now I find myself, I'll say it.
So that's your thing.
That's my thing. It's apparently I'm going to burn some bridges. It's just on my to-do list.
You know, it's kind of funny. You kind of wonder what the origins of some of these are.
Yeah.
You know, and it'd be fun to look some of these up, like that particular one. I mean, cross that bridge when we get there. I don't know where that comes from. But now I know where burn that bridge comes from because
yes.
You just shared it.
Yep. So I think, Bill, what we're going to have you do is we're going to have to task you with looking for the history behind some of these phrases in order to, and we'll have you back on to talk about it. So, Bill, of course, as always, thank you so much for stopping by.
That was fun. Thank you.
Bill Martins is a producer for Central Time. He was with us to talk about some of the quotes and phrases that made an impact in his life. And of course, you can keep the conversation going on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
If you've ever gone to the farmer's market and returned home with a few items that, well, you had to Google to figure out what to do with, well, you're not alone. Fresh produce can be a fantastic thing this time of year, but we could all use a little help figuring out what to do with it.
Whether you're a gardener, a farmer's market shopper, a CSA shareholder, or a food enthusiast who's looking to make fresh produce a part of your regular meals, our guests on today's Food Friday might have some inspiration for you.
Jonna Perkins is a manager and farmer at Vermont Valley Community Farm, LLC in Blue Mounds, Wisconsin, where she farms alongside family. You may have heard her on the show before talking about ultra running. She's here today to talk fresh produce. Jonna, thanks for joining us today. Welcome back.
Hi, thanks. Great to be here.
And we're also talking with Lauren Rudersdorf. She's also with us. She owns and operates Raleigh's Hillside Farm outside of Evansville with her husband, Kyle. Lauren, welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so before we get into the fresh produce, I want to ask you a little bit about your backgrounds. And Lauren, let's start with you. Did you grow up in a place where fresh produce was a really important part of your family and your family's meals?
Yeah, actually, I did. I lease land from my parents, so I'm farming where I grew up. So the whole farm way of life wasn't anything too unfamiliar to me. And my mom had this huge garden. She's an amazing cook. She's always, you know, when there's zucchini, she's putting zucchini in everything for 3 weeks straight. When there's tomatoes and everything for months straight. So yeah, I did get a really wonderful understanding of that early on.
Yeah. And Jonna, was that your story as well?
Well, I didn't grow up on a farm, but I did grow up in a family who cooked. My dad, my mom, my brother. I really can't remember a time where I didn't know how to cook. I also come from a family of hunters, so we were really always sourcing meat responsibly. My mother had a big garden, so food has always been a really big part of my life. But I didn't get into farming until I was 25.
And I want to talk more about that because I think I have a certain image in my head of what farmers are. I'm seeing the both of you. It may not match up with what I had initially thought. So tell us a little bit more about how you both got into farming. And Jonna, we can start with you.
Sure. So it was pretty accidentally. My boyfriend at the time, who is now my husband, it's his family farm. So I was dating him in the summer of 2005, and I went out to visit the farm and really fell in love with the experience. And a few years later, I was working there, and then a year later, I was married. So it all happened really fast. And growing up, I never imagined that I would be a farmer, but it's definitely become my life.
Yeah, and Lauren, how about you?
Yeah, not thinking you were going to be a farmer when you started off on your kind of career path in life. That's actually really similar for me, even though I grew up on a farm. I loved growing up there, and I love the rural way of life, but I really thought, like, the small town's not for me, rural life isn't for me, I'm going to go out and take on the world. And I went off to college, and I had a wonderful time. I traveled a ton, and I went away to Ohio for a couple of years to a private school, and all of a sudden I realized, like, while I was gone, how much I missed home, how much I missed the beautiful rolling hills of Wisconsin, how much I just missed some of those, like, agricultural
roots that I had that I didn't realize were important to me. And, you know, fast forward a couple of years later, I met my husband here in Madison. He was studying soil science. I was studying community environmental sociology. So that's public health and rural food systems and those kinds of things. And all of a sudden we realized, like, collectively, we could try this new kind of farming. And we learned about the CSA model, and we realized we could lease land from my parents to kind of change what farming meant to me as a kid. And that was really exciting.
So could you imagine yourself doing any other career at this point?
Not anymore. Yeah. Now that we're in it, it's hard to.
Yeah. So what are you growing on your farm?
We're a diverse vegetable operation growing primarily for CSA. So we are growing a ton of annual vegetables, everything from lettuce to zucchini to fennel to asparagus, kind of absolutely every veggie you can think of that grows here in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. And Jana, how about you? What are you growing on your farm?
Well, we're currently in our spring season delivery period, so most of what we're harvesting is coming out of our hoop house. So lots of lettuces, spinach, arugula, radishes, turnips. And then once we get into the summer months, we'll be harvesting a lot more summer staples like sweet corn and tomatoes and potatoes, broccoli. And we also have some unique vegetables like kohlrabi and celeriac. So we grow about 50 different kinds of vegetables.
We are talking with Jana Perkins and Laura Rudersdorf. It is Food Friday, and we are looking at fresh produce. And I want to get into more of some of the vegetables and the items that you were talking about. These are the things that we're starting to see at the farmer's market right about now. Myself, personally, I watch the farmer's market. I think, okay, like, here's some really cool stuff. I buy it. I take it home. Then I don't necessarily know what to do with it. Is this something that you hear from a lot of people? And I'm curious, when you go into the farmer's market, if you're looking for things, if you've got things in mind that you want to make, or it's like, I'm just going to get the items and I'm going to figure it out later.
Yeah, so Jana and I are both CSA farmers primarily. So for us, that's a really common thing that I hear, because we are... CSA started as this concept of people invest in the farm and then they get a share of everything we grow and produce each week seasonally. So they're getting, you know, all of this great variety, like Jana mentioned, in the spring. They're getting rhubarb and asparagus, but they're also getting things they might not be familiar with, like bok choy and green garlic. And there's a lot of variety, and people do kind of get stumped with that. Mm-hmm. So for me, I find inspiration in that, kind of trying to put these things together that are in season at the same time and figuring out what flavors work together. And another great thing about this kind of CSA model is that we really want to encourage our members to use this abundance and be excited about this local food. So a lot of CSA farmers are also producing, they're providing newsletters to their members, which have recipe resources and links and storage tips. So it is definitely a common concern, and most CSA farmers are really trying to help educate their consumers.
I'm really glad that you brought that up. And Jana, I wanted to ask how you see the role of education in all of this. Oftentimes I would think the farmer grows the product, sends the product off, and then it's on to the next thing. But do you see a strong opportunity for an educational opportunity in all of this?
Absolutely. And I think that is one of the big roles of CSA. And that's one of the big reasons why a lot of farmers want to get involved with their community, is they see it as an opportunity to help people understand how to cook with these things that grow locally to them. So like Lauren said, we put out recipes, and we have outreach events. We have schools that come out and visit the farm and get to work alongside us. We also have a great worker share program, which is where members, it's kind of like a barter system. So in exchange for a share of produce, they get to come out and work on the farm and see how their food is really grown. So I think there's a tremendous opportunity for education, and farmers want to talk about it. That's why we're doing it. We want to have a conversation with the people who are eating our food. And if you find a farm that you like, you reach out and ask questions. Go to the farmer's market stand, talk to the farmer, they're right there. And you can ask them how they prepare food or what they would recommend you buy on that particular day.
And I would think that you're probably getting more interest from people these days wanting to know where their food is coming from and what the story is behind it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And John and I, again, we're really big into social media and sharing our story. I have a blog in addition to running the farm, like a food and storytelling blog, and people love that. They love understanding not only where their food comes from, but like what it actually takes. What's, you know, it hailed on our farm 3 weeks ago, and people, they want to understand those complexities and those difficulties that come into farming. And it's a really beautiful world we live in that there's all these platforms to share that story.
Okay, so this is all great, but I wanted to get to some of the actual recipes now, and you were kind enough to bring a few with us today, and I want to start with you, Jonna. You've got one for shepherd's pie with turnips and greens. Now, turnip is an ingredient that I'm a little unfamiliar with, I have to admit. What kind of flavor does this ingredient offer?
Sure. So the actual turnip itself has a really delicate, almost floral flavor, and you can eat it raw or it can be cooked, and it cooks pretty much like a carrot. So that's the great thing about cooking is once you understand one vegetable, it helps you understand another. So, later in the season, you'll see my shepherd's pie has carrots in it or it'll have celeriac in it. But this time of year, it's turnips. So turnips have a really mild flavor, and then the green is also edible. So the green can be cooked down just like kale or spinach, and that gets put into the shepherd's pie. And we still have potatoes that we're storing over from last season, so I eat potatoes year-round. They're a huge staple of my diet, and so this is just one of my favorite meals to cook for my family.
And do you have a lot of those recipes where you kind of have the base or the backbone of it, and then really you're just kind of like changing out the ingredients as the season goes along?
That's pretty much how I cook. Yeah.
And this is just one where you can kind of take what you have, toss it in the casserole, put it in the oven, and that's pretty much it?
That's right. Yep.
Okay.
Super simple. It's really hard to mess up.
And so you blog about these recipes. Where can people go to find more information about some of the stuff that you're working on?
Sure. So I don't do much food blogging. That's Lauren does the food blogging, but I do a lot of food photography, and I share simple tips on the Vermont Valley Instagram page and my own Instagram account as well. But Lauren has an amazing food blog called The Leek and the Carrot.
Thanks, Jonna.
And we'll actually get into that blog and a recipe from that in just a few moments, but just wanted to take a moment to say that we are talking with Jonna Perkins. She's a manager and farmer at Vermont Valley Community Farm, LLC in Blue Mounds. And Lauren Rudersdorf is with us as well. She owns and operates Raleigh's Hillside Farm outside of Evansville.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What are some of your favorite dishes to make with fresh produce in your CSA or your garden, or maybe with your farmer's market buys? Is there a time you bought something on a whim only to later realize you had no idea what to do with it? And if you don't have a lot of experience with seasonal cooking, what kind of questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. Again, that's 800-642-1234, or comment on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll pick up that conversation in just a moment here on Central Time.
Right now, we continue the conversation about incorporating fresh produce into your cooking on this week's Food Friday. Joining us are two Wisconsin farmers. We have Jonna Perkins. She is the manager and farmer at Vermont Valley Community Farm, LLC in Blue Mounds. And Lauren Rudersdorf owns Raleigh's Hillside Farm outside of Evansville.
And we'd like to take your questions, too, at 800-642-1234. Do you have a few go-to dishes for fresh produce? What do you do when you've got too many of one thing growing in your garden? Is there a vegetable that has you thinking creatively about what to do with it? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can leave a comment or question over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And Lauren, I think one of the things that I return to time and time again for healthy lunches are salads. Maybe get a little tired of salads after a while, and it seems like dressing is a really good way to spice that up. And one of the recipes that you shared with us is a homemade green goddess dressing, which sounds awesome. I have to admit, I have the Kraft green goddess dressing in my refrigerator. I can almost promise you that it doesn't taste anywhere near as good as what you make. Tell us about this recipe.
Yeah, it's actually a brand new recipe to me that I just developed a couple weeks ago. I'm kind of always testing and trying new recipes because I know the ingredients that my CSA members find challenging. So I'm always kind of playing with those and trying to figure out new things. And lettuce and salad is actually a hard thing. We're giving a ton of lettuce in the spring. I had every week for like 6-7 weeks. And after a while, salad gets boring. You want to spice it up a little bit. I'm obsessed with this local restaurant, Forage. We actually sell produce to them, and they had this green goddess dressing that was amazing. And I was like, I need to figure this out. I'm gonna try this at home. And we had a ton of basil that we were trimming off some seedlings, and I put 2 cups of basil in there. I mixed it with Greek yogurt because we had that in our fridge. We had some ramps that someone generously gave us, and I just kind of like threw these flavors together, some olive oil, some apple cider vinegar. I put Worcestershire in it one time. I didn't another time. I think that was pretty much it. Maybe some lemon juice. And it was all of a sudden just this like bright, herbaceous, like amazing, amazing dressing that then I got to throw on a salad of greens and roasted asparagus and potatoes. And all of a sudden I was eating yogurt and vegetables on top of more vegetables. And I was surprised that it was so good. So that one is a real winner in my book. And it's really wonderful because it's versatile too. If you have scallions or shallots, you could put that in instead of the ramps. If you have cilantro and dill, you could put that in instead of the basil or a combination of herbs. So I think it brightens things up. It's fun.
And if this is something that someone wanted to do at home, are they able to find all the ingredients that they would need for this at their local grocery store or farmer's market or their CSA even?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. And again, because it's so versatile, if you have fresh basil at home, that's great. But if you see some herbs at market that look really good or a farmer recommends, you know, grab some of those instead. As long as you have, you know, something garlicky or something oniony and some herbs with that Greek yogurt and lemon juice, it's going to really come together.
And that's really going to blow my store brand company name that I won't say just out of the water. I mean, do you experiment with other kinds of salad dressing as well? I'm sure you have a lot of, you know, ingredients on hand at all times. Is this something that you've experimented with a lot?
All the time. Because same problem that everyone has, that in the spring, I'm bombarded with all these greens and I want to eat the stuff that's, you know, fresh from my fields, but I get bored of just the same old salads too. So we're experimenting. One kitchen tool that I think is essential is a food processor. You can make so many things in there. So I'm just like throwing things in my food processor and tasting it and then adjusting it again. And it's really fun.
Well, I've got a lot more questions, but I also want to bring in our listeners at 800-642-1234 with their questions and comments. And we'll go to Ellie in Econimowoc. Ellie, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my phone call. I have a question. Last fall at the farmer's market, I bought something called patty pan squash. And I'm like, I'm kind of adventurous with food, and I'm like, I'm going to take this home and figure out what to do with it. Well, I never did. I'm just wondering if you could tell me, like, how do you cook that and what does it taste like? Because I might try it again.
Okay, well, the patty pan is a really cute little squash. It's actually... my farm name is Lil Patty Pan, so that's my nickname on the farm. It looks like a spaceship, and it can be yellow or it can be like a really light green. And the skin is edible, so all you really need to do is chop off the end where the stem was, and you could eat it raw. You can chop it up and put it in a stir fry. You could bake with it. But it will hold up nice when it's cooked. So you just want to cube it and use it like you would with zucchini. So it is a summer squash.
So not so much like a butternut squash, but something you would use more in place of a zucchini.
Right. Yep, it's a summer squash. So okay. The skin is edible. It can be eaten raw. It'll just hold the flavor of whatever you've cooked with it.
All right. So, well, Elliot, hopefully that was helpful. Thank you so much for your call. And next, we're going to go to Gary, who is in Madison. Gary, hi.
Hi.
What would you like to ask, Gary?
My question is just about a CSA. And what would be in a typical package, and what time of year does the CSA run?
Good question, Carrie. Lauren, you want to tackle that one?
Yeah, absolutely. So every CSA is a little bit different, but generally they're anywhere from like 18 to 26 weeks, the seasons are. Jonas Farm's a little different. Vermont Valley breaks it into three different seasons, a spring, a summer, and a fall. We do one season. It's 20 weeks. It starts June 6th, ends October 17th, 18th, somewhere there. And... you know, the box varies every single week based on what's in season. That's a really fun thing about a CSA. You start to learn what is seasonal and what is local to Wisconsin. But a typical spring share right now, we're preparing for our first box, and it'll be bok choy, lettuce, scallions, maybe some green garlic, radishes, rhubarb, asparagus, maybe some kale. That's been growing really fast with all this rain. A lot of greens in June, a lot of greens.
And speaking of greens, oh, by the way, Gary, thank you so much for your call. I hope that was helpful. Generally, though, where do people go for more information? Let's say they're interested in signing up for a CSA and they're not sure where to start. Jonna, where is a good place for someone to go for more resources on that topic?
Sure. Well, there's a great nonprofit here in Madison called Fair Share CSA Coalition. Lauren and I have both been involved with the coalition for years. Fair Share can help people one-on-one if they have individual questions about farms, or there's a really great database on their website, and there's great search tools. You can select different features that you want, different delivery dates. It can be based on your geographic location where you want to pick up your share. So there's a lot to consider when you're choosing a farm, and the Fair Share CSA Coalition website is a really great tool. Otherwise, word of mouth. Ask around. A lot of people in Madison have been part of a CSA farm, or they currently are, and I think getting those firsthand recommendations is probably the best way to go.
We are talking about fresh produce here on Food Friday. Still time for your questions at 800-642-1234. And while we wait for your call, I want to ask about one or two more of your recipes. And I want to go to the rhubarb margaritas because I want to make sure that we have time for that. Lauren, this is a recipe that you shared with us, so I'm totally on board with this. But rhubarb is not necessarily... I know when you get rhubarb, like, you get rhubarb, you get a lot of it. I never thought to make a margarita with it. Tell us a little bit about this recipe.
Yeah, rhubarb is something, again, that I experiment with because the first pound or two you give a CSA member, they're making rhubarb crisp, they're making rhubarb pie, they're making desserts, they're really happy with it, and then all of a sudden they're like, okay, now... now I'm not sure what to do anymore. Or for people who have their own plants, they know that problem very well. So this is just a really fun recipe because, I don't know, last year I started drinking my vegetables, I guess. I started experimenting a lot with cocktails like a cucumber, basil, I think was mojito maybe, and things like that. So the rhubarb margarita is really simple. I probably use my food processor, but you wouldn't have to. I just essentially created a puree out of the rhubarb and some sugar and some honey, reduced it down on the stove, so that, and then I strained it out, so you just get the syrup out of there. And then you just blend it with things that you put in a normal margarita, so tequila and a simple syrup and lime juice, essentially.
And I should say that we have all the recipes that we've talked about today on our Food Friday webpage at WPR.org. So check out that site for the recipe for rhubarb margaritas and the shepherd's pie and everything else that we've talked about. Oh, the green goddess dressing. How could I leave that out? I want to make sure we get time for one more call. Karen is with us in Appleton with a question. Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling for, I guess, more ideas. Last summer at the Green Bay Farmers Market, I bought Romanesco from a Mennonite stand. Beautiful vegetable. I oven roasted it, but just wondering what else I can do with it.
Okay, great care. Question, Karen. I don't even know what Romanesco is. Jonna, Lauren, what do you think?
You know, we don't grow Romanesco, and I don't have a lot of cooking tips for that one.
We don't grow it either, and that's actually the most traditional thing that I've seen done with it, is that it's roasted. And those things, they're fun to... I like roasting vegetables is my go-to, and then again, making some sort of amazing sauce in my food processor and throwing it on. So that's kind of my best recommendation. But it tastes kind of like a broccoli and a cauliflower crossed. So you did the right thing with it.
Well, Karen, I'll tell you what. We're going to look into Romanesco. Maybe that's a topic that we can explore on a future Food Friday. Well, in our last minute or so, I want to ask, a lot of people are going to be grilling out this weekend, having celebrations. What's a great thing that they can whip up if they just go to their local farmer's market looking for vegetables for a great side dish, maybe even a meal that would complement whatever they're going to have on Memorial Day?
Yeah, that's a great question, and another one of my go-to things. You can grill any vegetable. Just try it. You really can. I grilled cabbage last summer. It was amazing. You can get a bunch of scallions and grill them up. Asparagus grilled is wonderful. Just buy whatever looks good and throw it on the grill, and you'll be happy.
What do you think, Jonna?
Yeah, we do a lot of grilling in our house, especially in the summer when we just want to be outside. I'll even do my preparations outside on the deck, and then my husband has the grill going with, you know, some steaks or some brats. We grill scallions. I've put a head of lettuce on the grill before. You cut the end off, drizzle it with some olive oil and some really nice salt and pepper. Anything can go on the grill. This is a great time of year for salads as well. I know Lauren shared that great recipe, but a salad doesn't have to just be limited to greens. You can grate any vegetable onto that. And you can even put warm vegetables onto a cold salad, which we do that a lot in our house as well.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks for letting me come on.
Thanks so much.
Jonna Perkins is farm manager at Vermont Valley Community Farm LLC in Blue Mounds. She writes about her farm and ultra running life at theultrafarmer.com. And Lauren Rudersdorf owns and operates Raleigh's Hillside Farm outside of Evansville. You can find these recipes and much more over on our website at WPR.org/Food Friday. It's a proven scientific fact that the greatest song of the 1980s is Africa by Toto. Anyone who says otherwise is lying to you. It's the perfect mix of great instrumentation, overly detailed lyrics, and 80s cheese. So, perhaps not unsurprisingly, the song has become somewhat of an internet meme in recent years.
Yeah, and fans of the song, or at least the meme, are apparently going to great lengths to keep the joke going. It turns out that a young internet user in Cleveland, Ohio, has been basically trolling the band Weezer to get them to cover the classic. So, but you know, maybe this didn't
end up the way it was supposed to be.
Well, so this week, actually, Weezer delivered, but it wasn't necessarily what fans were expecting.
Yeah, so that is Toto's other and lesser-known hit, Rosanna. So, not what we were expecting.
I mean, if, I feel like if you're going to troll Weezer, Weezer's going to troll right back.
And they did.
And they did. I compared this earlier. It's like when someone keeps yelling, like, Freebird at the band, and then the band's like, okay, well, we're going to play Stairway to Heaven, which I guess is kind of cool, but it's not really what
it's
you want.
It's not what you want, and I feel like the internet needs Weezer now to cover it. So, on behalf of 14-year-old Mary in Cleveland, Ohio, we have this message for Rivers Cuomo.
Hurry, boy, she's waiting there for you.